Welcome back to the Roofing Sales Podcast. I'm your host, Jacob, and today I have Tyler Winters from Terminus Construction Group. How are you doing today, Tyler?
Doing great. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing awesome. Just got back from a training for Polyglass. Glad to be back in town. I was exhausted. Sleeping in a hotel bedroom for three nights was not fun. I tell you that much.
No, but I'm sure the knowledge that you gained was worth your time, though, for sure.
It was awesome. So let's dive right into it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, kind of your background?
Absolutely. So my name is Tyler Winters, based out of now Woodstock, Georgia. And so I'm 32 years old. I got a beautiful wife, three girls. So I'm a girl dad through and through. And so, you know, if you can raise girls properly and feel confident in that, I feel like you can probably attack anything. So, So from Woodstock, like I said, you know, I was never one of those guys that had to get out of where I grew up at or anything like that. But I never like felt like that I had to stay there either. It just conditionally happened through, you know, my college choice where I went and played tennis at and everything, and jobs after college and everything. It just naturally left, you know, got to be here, and we forged some really cool relationships because of that and everything too.
Yeah. Awesome. So tell us a little bit about like your sales background specifically, like what led you to get into the roofing industry and where you're at right now.
Absolutely. So I think like a lot of people, this is a very incestuous industry. And what I mean by that is generally you come up by it or through it through family at some point or somehow and everything. And so my dad's been around roofing for over half my life now. You know, he did anything from site supervision, sales management, and really got to learn what that looked like. He came out of the car business and into roofing. So the mindset of, you know, attacking what you want and wanting to go after has always been there. But they also wanted me to kind of play the safe route. And so, you know, I ended up going to college, getting a degree, ended up using that degree, my business administration degree. And through that, I started getting into more of my sales background and everything. My first gig out of college, I worked for an educational software company, you know, totally very similar to roofing, you know, they're exactly the same. And so, but then after that, had a short stint in a different industry that was soul sucking. And I decided to see what else was out there. And I was fortunate enough to land a job with Adidas. And so I was a territory manager for Adidas for about 4 years, managed the, you know, essentially from Louisiana all the way up to North Carolina. And just, I think that's where I learned a lot of, things that we've transitioned into the roofing industry in some really cool ways. But that was a super impactful position, both because of the leadership I got to sit under and the experience and the, you know, the high volume sales aspect of it too. So I got to learn a lot of very cool things that as we transitioned into roofing, that they made a lot of sense. But the stopgap between that and roofing for me, I actually came from a distribution. And so I sold materials for Beacon Roofing Supply for about 3.5-4 years. And through that job, through that experience, got to see what some incredible contractors did really, really well. And obviously the other side of that coin, there's some out there that you learn some things not to do and to avoid as well, obviously. Yeah. And so that's kind of how where we got to, and Terminus is now in its third year. And so it's been a super cool journey to this point, everything too.
That's awesome. So then tell us a little bit about Terminus. I know you're VP of sales. And the company is owned by your wife and sister-in-law. So how did Terminus come to be, and tell us kind of like what the goal is with that company?
Absolutely. And so the company is, like I said, we're in our third year. My brother and I, coming from a background of knowing roofing all our lives, and before he got on with Beacon and was anything from a sales rep, sales manager, commercial manager for some different contractors and things of that nature, it was always that big pipe dream of one day, maybe we could do this, or one day we could figure out what that looked like. And there's just never anything more than just that one day conversation. And my wife and my sister-in-law, both being around the industry like they had been for so many years, saw a lot of, like I mentioned, successful entrepreneurs, especially there's some that have very recently gotten the industry that are female owners just like them in the industry, and seeing what the potential out there is and what the success opportunities are out there. they said, forget it. We're not waiting around for y'all's one day thing. Like, we're going to start this. This is going to be our thing. And so my wife was, she did hair and makeup behind the chair for quite a few years. And my sister-in-law was a dental hygienist, but they saw the industry and they saw the side of the industry we were in for so long. And they dove all in. And before my brother and I decided to come over and figure out what that looked like, they'd already sold some commercial jobs. They'd already gotten our residential arm of the business kind of rocking and rolling at a local level. And so it was really cool to step into that with them. And so we've been going strong. Like I said, this is year three. We do residential and commercial. So anything from your you know, normal asphalt shingle application, flat roofing, and specialty products, we've kind of done it all. We have expertise and certifications and kind of all those arenas that allow us to be players in the game. And so this year will be our first, what we're forecasting to be our first eight-figure year. So we're super, super excited about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So where did the name Terminus come from? How did they decide on that?
Everybody that has heard Terminus probably thinks the show Walking Dead. I don't know if you're a fan of that, but yes. that's, you know, shout out to the Walking Dead fans out there. But Terminus is actually kind of what one of the original names for Atlanta was before they landed on what it was going to be called and everything. Martha'sville is one of the original names, and it went through a few transitions, but they called it Terminus because it's where the majority of rail cars terminated their journey and everything. It was obviously a huge distribution hub and things going back and forth through Savannah and stuff like that. But it was something that was truly, truly, truly original to this area. And our family all grew up in this area. We've got very deep family ties throughout the area and stuff like that. And so we just wanted to play into that. We wanted to be that company that has been rooted here, that has history here, that knows the neighbors really well and things of that nature. And then the story behind the train situation and stuff, we can play into that with our marketing campaigns and stuff. Our tagline is we want to be the last stop for all your construction needs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our branding and stuff is centered around like a railroad spike. And so, you know, our top performer gets the Golden Spike Award every year. And we look at that through our lens of, you know, our culture and our core values and things that like that. And so we truly have built a brand in a construction space that leaves people remembering our company and leaves people remembering a story beyond just a roof.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a second. You said culture and core values. I mean, what is your culture that you're trying to, you know, make over there? What's your core values and how did you guys kind of land on those? And where did that come from?
Right. I think a lot of people, there's been a lot of perception of the industry over the last few years. Oh, you can come into this and you can do whatever and make a ton of money. And, you know, oh my gosh, it's changed my life. And all those stories are absolutely true. But I think what it left in the market, it left a very one against one personality type of situation. I'm going to go get mine and I'm the best at what I do. People are going to only want to work with me. And we've kind of flipped that script and we're an extremely team first setup here. There's never a time in the week that if somebody can't run an adjuster appointment, that somebody's not covering it. If they need help, you know, on a steep inspection and bring extra fall protection, things like that. There's a team first mindset. And it's really, really cool what we've built in that capacity. And I think that also with that is accountability is a huge piece that misses in this industry. I feel like it's really easy for somebody to come in and be held accountable if they naturally show signs of being successful. So those are the easy guys to latch onto. Those are the easy ones to hold accountable because you're like, man, they're going to be my top sales guys. Of course, I'm going to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
But what we say very transparently in our screening process is you will be held to a much higher standard here at this company. And the things that you say you want to get, those are things that you absolutely will be held accountable to. And these are going to be the action items, how to get there. And I really believe in the action that they take is insurmountable and better than any natural talent somebody could bring in. And hopefully that work out and put a focus onto that. Or if not, then they're out the door anyway, because it's a high turnover industry. And so we just kind of want to flip the narrative on that. And so we invest in our guys and some really cool programs that we do. We have a really cool parlor community in our company. Those are our top producers that crest a certain threshold of sales for us. And there's accolades that come along that we put them into mastermind dinners and things like that throughout the year and talk about how to leverage, you know, financial freedom, how to look at, you know, the benefits of 1099 versus W-2. And that's one of the things you talk about in your program a little bit too and everything. And so we just want to leave our guys with the perception and the idea that we're going to be the best stewards as we can be of the people in our company and giving them the opportunity to better themselves and everything.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, I mean, how many people do you have at your organization right now? Kind of like, how many do you have in your sales staff? And then how many do you guys have as a company?
Absolutely. So, as you know, in this industry, it fluctuates. This is our slow time, even though it's Georgia, we're able to work year round. You know, there is a little bit of a dip. And so we kind of re-geared and are waiting to restructure into the upcoming year. We currently have 5 guys selling for us and a sales manager as well. So we've still got a great set of boots on the ground. They're still out there doing amazing things, and the weather's cooperating, giving us some good things to work here at the beginning of the year. But as Q2 kicks off, we'll be up to about 12 sales guys in our market. And that's what we have found in our model that makes sense for us. And obviously from company to company, that's going to vary based on how you're structured in your back end with your set, with your, you know, office staff, and how you, what the roles and responsibilities are. But for us, that's our sweet spot of keeping profitability where we want it and keeping the volume pushing in the right direction. Some of the senior guys also use those relationships that they have and are starting to branch off and diversify their business portfolio and getting into some of the commercial space as well. But within that, our office staff, we have obviously our 4 owners. So we're family owned, family operated. We've got a production manager in the office that handles everything from once the job is signed, he takes it over and gets it across the finish line of production and into our supplement team. So we've got supplementers on staff. And then our financial team is doing everything they need to collect invoice, final closeout, all that kind of good stuff, register warranties. So we've got another about 5 or 6 people in the office on a daily basis too. So we're generally floating between, you know, 12 and 20 in the team and everything like that.
That's awesome. You look at companies that are, you know, as young as you guys are, and most of the time they're not doing the things that you guys are doing and having that support staff to support the sales staff. Cause that's, I think, really, really important to keep your sales people on board, because a sales guy can be amazing and sell all he wants, but if there's not support from the company on 100%. The back end, why do they want to stay? They'll sell and sell and sell, and the jobs won't get built. And we see that pretty frequently, I think, in the industry when we're looking at, you know, these conferences we go to, we're talking about other contractors, we're talking to contractors, they're talking about high turnover rate. And it's like, why are you having a high turnover? It's because you can't build their jobs. Not because you can't, you know, support, or you can't keep the sales guys happy.
Right.
You know, you're keeping them happy with a lot of sales, but then you can't build their jobs and now they don't get paid. They don't want to stay, you know, it's something that I think this industry is, there's a shift that's happening that is really pushing towards that support, which is awesome. I think it's something that we've needed for a very, very long time, and it's finally happening. So that kind of brings me to something a question I've kind of asked a few times, but it's not something I normally go to. There's 2 different models of pay structure for the industry. One we call like the storm restoration model, and then there's the flat fee commission model. You know, what do you guys prefer at Terminus, and why do you use that model?
Yeah, and it's funny what you were just saying about, you know, frustration and things when they get to production fall off and things of that nature. And I think that in conversation with how we pay our guys are one and the same and reasoning for it. Like we mentioned, we worked with a lot of great contractors when we were in distribution. And we saw that the ones that were consistently producing jobs, consistently getting jobs closed out, consistently doing all the things that they touted that they could do, they're the ones that keep guys happy. At the end of the day, people generally don't leave a company for something other than bad leadership or financial frustrations. And so we have weekly meetings with our whole staff from the sales side of the organization to the operational side, talking about what's worked well that week, what we need to work on for the following week, big picture about where we're going, forecasting, you know, storms that we're working and things of that nature. We've got, you know, a fantastic opportunity right now that we're working. And Monday, we've got to sit down and really look through the logistics of the whole operation, because it's like, this is something that could be super impactful for our guys and we need to make this work. And so that's the mindset we have in that regard too. And I completely agree. We can probably talk about this a little bit later, but I think collaboration is a big word that's happening in the industry that hasn't happened before. And so I'd love to kind of come back to that. But to answer your question about the payment side of everything, and this goes back to what we've seen in the industry is, if you ask a guy that's paid off the profit of a job to tell you what the overhead in the company is and to talk to you about what the true profit is of the job, there's a lot left to not be completely certain about. Mm-hmm. And so our pay structure just lends itself to complete transparency. We pay our guys off the top of the contract, and what they sell that job for is what they're going to get paid off of. And so it allows them to know the lanes that they operate in from an upgrade standpoint, mm-hmm. To how they want to negotiate financing situations and options there. But it just leaves them not knowing, you know, or it leaves the certainty of if I sell this job for $20,000, I know my commission structure is going to be mm-hmm. barring my, you know, my bonus at the end of the quarter, because then we turn around and bonus to people based on volume sales. And so they know they're going to add additional percentage to that sales from the quarter based on their performance. Yeah. But outside of that, they can look at a job and know where they stand at it. And then we also do 50-50 as far as not, you know, when we say 50-50 is we do check for check. And so the front end of it, working the insurance restoration side, we're collecting that first payment. They're getting half their commission, and it helps with cash flow for them as well.
Right.
That we're not holding it till the very end, and there's not a situation where you got to slow invest adjuster, and we've got to resend this, it gets reassigned. So it just keeps the cash flow for our sales reps more consistent and mm-hmm. able to track weekly what they need to be bringing in.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that. So then let's talk about, while we're kind of on the topic of the sales staff, pay structure, all that kind of stuff. You know, I've got one of the questions I asked is 1099 or W-2 and why? Mm-hmm. The reason I kind of bring that question up is because it's a big question in our industry of, you know, what a sales guy, should be based on the company. I think it's really based on what that company provides for that sales rep to determine what tax bracket or tax classification they'll be in. Some people have this idea though, that no matter what, everybody should be a 1099 because it's easy, right? It's right. The easiest way for the company to make as much money as possible. That's not always true though. So I asked this question not to call people out who do use 1099s, but more to mm-hmm. get an idea of, okay, which do you guys do for your sales staff? And mm-hmm. what is the reason you've chose to go that way? And you're kind of like your preferred way to pay the sales staff, what you think is most beneficial to y'all and them.
Right. And I will give it like a public, like CYA. I think you need to consult with your CPA in the state that you're in to make sure that you're obviously doing what's appropriate. So I don't want to say that this is a blanket approach to this at all. Mm-hmm. Our market, the 1099 approach does work very well. It gives those guys the perception of the flexibility and that they are truly running their own business. We want them to feel prideful in that. Mm-hmm. But we don't just say good luck and we'll just pay you as a 1099 contractor. But we actually set our guys up. We're fortunate enough to have a fantastic relationship with a fantastic CPA. Mm-hmm. We make sure that they're properly set up with LLCs or S corporations, depending on how they want to handle that liability. But then having conversations about exactly that tax liability, like nobody, I'm not going to say nobody, the overwhelming majority of people that get into 1099 world don't truly understand what the options are and how to maximize their income and how to minimize what the taxation side is. And so, you know, we bring in financial consultants, we bring in CPAs, we bring in people to put around our guys to say, there's more than one way to skin a cat. We'll never disagree with that. But this is the approach that we find that works very well for you, that sets you and your family up for the financial freedom and the ability to go out and know what certain purchases need to be made, not just going out and blowing money to blow money, but truly consulting with people and making sure that moment in time is that tax burden worth buying something against and things of that nature. So that structure works for us because our guys are set up with that type of thing and we're bringing those folks in quarterly. And so being able to see our guys set up their LLCs and set up things to properly be ready for tax season, because at the end of the year, it's like, holy crap, I'm going to cross my fingers and my toes and hope that number's as small as it can be.
Yep.
And there's just a much easier way to do things. And there's a, you know, I think fear of the unknown scares the crap out of people. So get to know it, get to understand it. get into the weeds of what that truly means. And I think that on the other side of that coin, W-2 is exceptional as well for its own reasons. And yeah. I'm not discrediting that either. Mm-hmm. And there's a day where we may shift in our focus in that capacity. I know a lot of larger contractors are moving in that direction for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And so I am more of the belief that whichever one you choose to be a part of, you've got to get to know it. Even if you W-2, you don't just be like, cool, everything's taken care of. And you know, well, and because we hear it so many times, well, my company pays our insurance. It's like, that's not how that works. You're literally paying for it just out of a check.
Yeah.
And so it's like getting the perceptions to like be minimized about like false expectations and realities and just saying, this is what it is. This is the approach. This is how we do things to make sure that you're successful. You need to know everything you need to know.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I think that really helps you guys stand apart in the industry because a lot of people will just hire 1099, kind of like I said, because it makes them the most money as a company,
right.
But they don't care about the sales staff. And they just like, okay, well, you know, you're going to be paid 1099 and you get to pay your own taxes, which means you get a bigger check, but just buy a bunch of stuff for work and it'll help you write it off.
Right.
Right? But they don't tell you how to do that. They don't give you any advice at all. And I will say that's kind of what hurt me my first year in sales was there. And this wasn't because my company wasn't trying to at the time. They also didn't really know themselves. Right.
Right.
And it kind of caused all of us to just be like, oh, what do we do? You know? And I think that so many contractors right now is they're just like, all right, we're just going to bring you in and you go out and knock doors and sell whatever you want. And if you really go out there and do the activity, you'll get a fat commission check and there you go, do whatever with it, right? But there's no help with it, you know, there's no guidance.
Right, and it's a detriment. And I think that it's, in certain states, so easy to go into business for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I always encourage guys, if you feel like you're tooled in a way and you feel like you want to, and I have to hold myself to the standard, because if somebody leaves my company and they're like, I want to go start my own thing, I think if you look at it through the correct lens in one capacity, it's one of the biggest compliments you can have that somebody felt like they had learned things in such a, either it's two, one of two things. They learned things and they're like, this is something I'd like to do for myself, where it's like, holy crap, this guy has no clue what's going on. I got to do the complete opposite of it.
Right.
But for me, like, I've got to be able to say I was a good steward of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's just such a detriment to an individual to say, bet on us, leave whatever you had behind and come do this because you can make shit tons of money.
Yeah.
And then you get the oversized t-shirt. You literally get sent to areas somewhere where that guy himself would not normally get out and knock a door himself. Let's like get out that out there too.
Yeah.
But just saying good luck. And then that guy falls off and it's so easy for the owner, the sales manager to be like, well, that guy wasn't cut out for it. Mm-hmm. It's like you uprooted somebody's life. Like you've got to be a better steward of making sure that they're comfortable with what they're approaching. Mm-hmm. And so we onboard a lot less number of people and we will continue to dwindle that number down, but we've locked into the people that truly want to be a part of this and that trust us to handle the initial process of getting into this industry and then taking them to success, not just leaving them right here.
Oh yeah. And I think that's something that I was a sales manager back at my last company and I did not really know how to interview and hire people. Right. So somebody would tell me something and I'd be like, oh sweet, this guy is awesome, he's telling me that he does really good in this industry, right. And I'd say, oh, I think they're going to make a perfect salesman here. And you know, granted, I kind of took that approach because I came from a lawn and landscaping background. I owned my own company for 6 years and the reason I sold it was because I hurt myself and I got out and I came over here. But most people my age were not like me and I didn't realize that until I hired a bunch of people that didn't work out, right? And so I had this like mindset that everybody was going to be just like me and they were going to do really well and be super successful.
Because that's your standard. That's what
exactly.
You look to every day. Exactly.
Exactly. And so I ended up hiring people that were very good people, but they weren't cut out for the work. And so I think at our prime, I had 10 sales guys working for me. And when I ended up leaving, we had only 4 of them still there that I had hired. Mm-hmm. I think I'd hired about 13, and then we had 4 left. So 9 of them that I had hired at the time just ended up, it wasn't a good fit for them. Something happened. I either had to let them go because what they said in the interview did not translate to their actual work ethic. or, you know, they just weren't cut out. They felt like they couldn't do it. And they wouldn't, they were like, oh, Jacob, I know you're telling me to do this, but I can't do it. And I'm like, come on, dude, I know you can be successful if you just do this thing. And we realized that it just wasn't working for their personality.
Right.
And so they ended up leaving and going doing something else. And, you know, luckily I still have a really good relationship with all of them, and they're being successful in what they're doing now because they found a better place to be. But I pulled in people that I thought were going to be awesome, and I made a mistake, you know? And that's something that I've learned, you know, over this last year of, you know, bringing in the right people, because I was almost pressured to bring in a certain number of people per class,
right?
Had to fill the class and train them right. And so this company I'm with now, Rhino Roofers, we, you know, are very specific about who we hire. And, you know, we'll have at any given time when we put out an ad for a position, sales, marketing, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. We'll have 50 to 100 applications, but we're only hiring like if marketing, one person, right? Business development, one person, right? Sales, two, three, four people. We're finding those specific people that we know are going to fit the industry. They're going to want to be held accountable to what their goals are and be very successful. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't do anymore. They're just like, oh, you have a pulse? Okay, go knock a door.
And I think everybody that's tried that, if they go back and hopefully, God, I hope they're tracking this, but if you track their retention from the first year, it'll make you sick to look back at that retention list. And you're like, oh my God. And like, that was like, for me, the turning point was like the first year that, you know, we were in a group with consulting stuff, and we had gotten our processes as a company really locked in and honed in. And so the next step was, well, grow, replicate. And just like you, like there's a learning curve. If you've never interviewed people, there's 100%. When I did it at first, I was probably in the same boat you were, probably worse. And, but now I just am, I'm unrelenting when it comes to my approach of the initial interview process. The only lens I've look at that through is through the core value lens.
Yeah.
If I have to justify even in the slightest that somebody could be this and they're not currently, then they're probably not going to be getting into the next round of interviews. Because at the end of the day, like when you justify somebody's space in a company, then they are also going to have to be constantly fighting for your approval. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's a toxic relationship versus, hey, these are the values and you completely check these boxes. We know that you would fit perfectly here. So we're going to line you up with the next step of the process.
Yeah.
Because then it's cool. It's like, they've got that feeling of, oh, they see, even though they don't know me as a person, they can trust who I am and what I stand for based on what I've spoken in the interview. And then it becomes really easy to, you know, slow to hire, quick to fire, because the second that something falls out of line, it's like, man, I thought this was, you know, I thought we talked about, you know, one of our core values being relentlessness, man. You're not showing that you're relentless. You haven't even completed your first module of training. Like, And so, you know, it just helps that process so much more, because I was the same way. Like I said, I literally probably did not retain 40 folks the first year that we tried to, you know, onboard brand new reps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And dude, that's, you know, this as well as I do, there's only so much time in the day. And there's, how much do you value your own time and your company's time too? It's like,
yeah, 100%.
Start hiring the right people. So,
you
know, quit saying that this is for everybody. Identify the personalities that work well in your organization, develop the ones that, you know, have the right character traits and may not have the background in it. Quit looking for these $1 million producers. Go develop them yourself and find somebody that actually would want to be with you long-term.
100%. I love that. So it's great. I want to talk about what you said there. You know, is this industry for everybody? What do you look for in a potential sales rep?
It is not for everybody. And just when we thought we had the secret sauce of these are the check marks that the person is that we have to hire, there's things that shifted. And then the next person we brought on, but like what we noticed again, it wasn't specific things that they said or did. It was just that the energy of the conversation was that this person is another one of our values is, man, they're tribal. They talk about how much they want to win with other people. They want to see other people succeed. man, they're innovative. They talked about how they brought in a new process to the logistics industry that, you know, got trucks out the door 3 minutes faster. Like whatever that those traits and values are, you know, they're cross-functional, they go across industries. But it's not for everybody. And I've seen people that try to justify it working for a year or 2 years, and then they're burned out and they are further behind than when they started. The company looks at them and it's like, man, I've tried to get you going. Like, you know, there's all these, it's just, you know, it is what it is. And we've just been selective with people, and we are very transparent about how hard the work is. We're very transparent about this is cyclical. Like, there will be storms that, you know, that if you don't work and you don't harvest in the middle of, then the few months after are going to be, you know, bleak.
Yeah.
And so you've got to find the person that's resilient. You've got to find the person that fits. Like, I go back to it all the time. They've got to fit the values, even if it's somebody who's writing supplements for you. If they're not relentless, that's probably not a good supplement person.
Yeah.
100%. You know, just there's just certain things that we've become very, I'm not going to say narrow-minded in a bad way, but like we've put the blinders on and we've figured out the lens that we look through. And if that person looks different than the person did before, but they're in that lens and the blind and they're inside those rails, those guardrails, then there's a reason to continue speaking with them. And there's a reason to say, hey, I know this may not be something you've ever considered before, but let's like talk about what you want to achieve. And then let's talk about how, you know, reverse engineering and talking about the action of the day to day can get you to that place. But if you're not willing to 100% commit to these action items, I don't care about your potential. I don't care about what you could do. I don't care about what your excuses were. It falls to what action items did you take that day to hit your targets, to hit your goals, to move you and your family in the direction they want to head.
100%. And I think that when it comes to just in general hiring, we have this, people don't understand that, you know, your weakest person is how strong your team is. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they will also try to like, you were kind of talking about making excuses earlier and giving them a chance and hoping that they're going to do well. And then what ends up happening is they're just like barely meeting basic standards in the sales game. Right. And so, you know, then your team is just being held back because they're like, oh, well, I'm doing way better than this guy, so I must be super successful. Right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, your team can't perform at a high level. Whereas if you have really quality people that you've vetted through your core values that are really going out there and making things happen, you're going to have a really competitive team that's going to want to build each other up and get better and watch each other just get better and better and better and better. And
yeah,
that's super important. I think a lot of people don't care about. A lot of business owners, when they get into the industry, they'll say, I want a really successful company, right? I was just at this Polyglass training, and one of the guys who was an owner of a company came in and said, you know, I've only been in business for a year and I came from real estate. And the only reason I'm in the roofing industry is because I met this guy right next to me. He's my business partner, and he had roofing experience, and he brought this idea to me. And I said, every roofing owner I know has a ranch and a plane. Hell yeah, I'm in, right? There's this mindset that you can make so much money in roofing, right? But how do you do that properly? And then people like that will just be like, oh, I want a $10 million company. And so then they'll just hire anybody they can until they get to the 10 million. And they'll have $300,000-$400,000 producers that are doing nothing, right? And they're just hurting the company's bottom line. So it's very important that we're hiring to that, you know, those standards to make sure that your company is really, truly trying to find the best people to fit.
Yes, I completely agree. And man, if you're in this industry just for a get rich, like it's out there, it's available. You're going to step on a lot of people to get to where you want to be. And then you're going to have to reevaluate 10 years later if the money you made was truly worth the bridges you burned and the perception of yourself that you made. Not saying you can't go out there and make money. I'm just saying when I hear stories like that and there's not a big viewpoint of the other side of the coin, it's like we're in this business because we want to make people whole from a huge impact to their, you know, to their house.
Exactly.
We say it like, we're very specific in our wording, like this is your customer's largest asset that they own. And this is a process that they will go through once or maybe twice in their lifetime, maybe three times if they live in your market, maybe three times a year.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, San Antonio, y'all get grapefruits. We just like one of those cut in half over in Georgia. But it's a very toxic thing to just be concerned about the dollar and not be concerned about the impact you're making. And the big thing this last year and onward for me is just being the best steward of the things we're given. And that's opportunities, people, customers. Like, how did I leave that situation and be the best steward of it? Did I give them what they needed or what they didn't know they needed? Did I give them honest information that maybe didn't make them buy from me? That, you know,
yeah.
Did I handle that opportunity transparently? Did I do everything to the highest standard? Could something be questioned that I did? Right. And so those are the things that we try to constantly, I look through personally and try to always encourage our team to look through. And it's been really cool to see that feeling go into the team and like, even, you know, mantras that have developed out of our sales team, like trust us, and Terminus is kind of the middle, so it says trust Terminus, but just these values and beliefs that people are out living in the road, in the streets or whatever, in the areas. And just like you said, I know my lowest common denominator is constantly being raised because of the guys that we have, because they're holding each other accountable now.
Yep.
And I don't have to worry that if I send out my newest guy, is he going to do something out of the integrity of our company? Because to that point, everything he's done has been evaluated through that. Mm-hmm. And that's the lens and lanes he knows to operate in.
Yeah, 100%. And I think this industry is very lucrative in the fact that you don't have to have a degree or a background at all to come in here and make $150,000 a year.
Right.
And a lot of people don't think about that. You know, when I first, got into landscaping, right, I had a lot of people that said, when are you going to get a real job? Right. When are you going to go to college, get a degree, and go get a real job? And I said, oh, I want to work for myself. I like doing what I'm doing. At the time, I was super passionate about taking this before and after look at everything and taking care of what this customer valued. And that's just what their house looks like. And it looks, you know, I was very, very passionate about that. And, you know, the passion that I had in my business translated into roofing sales because I fell on this accidentally. I knew a guy through landscaping who joined roofing because of a friend that he knew. And when I hurt myself, I called that guy up and I said, hey, I need a job. Are you hiring? Right. I had no idea anything about roofing. I had never talked to him about it before. I didn't know what kind of money you can make. I just was like, I need a job, right? Yep. I'll figure it out later, right? And I got in there and, you know, it was incredible. And for a 20-year-old to make $84,000 in their first year and not know anything about the industry, and I'll tell you this, I did zero door knocking my first year. Zero door knocking, still made $84,000 with no degree as a 20-year-old. That was amazing for me, right? And I think that's amazing for anybody. And it's because this industry is so lucrative, but you have to have the drive and the want and the commitment to be in this industry. It can't just be like, hey, guess what? If you come in here, you're going to make $100,000 this year.
Right.
Right.
I agree completely.
You can't do that. It's not possible. I think that people can make really good money if they have the drive and the mindset to do it. And it all stems, I love that you said this, about taking care of the customer and their biggest investment. And that's a huge selling point for me too, when I meet with my customers, because that's truly what it is. It is their biggest investment. And you have to be able to have a relationship with your customer. We literally just talked about this in our last sales meeting of having a transactional mindset versus a relational mindset. And too many people are focused on that transactional mindset and seeing, okay, this customer is going to make me $2,000, right? So I'm going to get my $2,000 and go. But that loses you so many jobs. It doesn't gain you any referrals, right? You can be, you can make a perfect process and, you know, you hit all the things, check all the boxes, and the roof goes perfectly. But if you don't have a relationship with that customer, they're not going to refer you to other people. And I think right. that's super important to work on.
Right. And I like even in my pitch and the way that I like to do like my closing stuff, because I still go out and close some deals and help the guys and stuff. I got sales managers in the field all day, every day. But if I'm able to get out of the office and be in the field, I still love that. And, you know, to that same tagline of like, you know, this is your largest investment. Like, and so many roofers out there want, like, this is our job. We do this on a daily basis. And we don't stop and think about the gravity of that decision. Yeah. And so, like, I want to spend a few extra minutes with you. Like, do you have questions about it? Like, you know, if you're coming and going from work, like, let's set the reality of like what that looks like. Let's set the reality of, hey, we've got a site supervisor that if anything happens, they have construction background experience to make sure that we're making the proper decisions on the site mm-hmm. to making sure that we're, you know, we're not subjecting your house to further issues down the road or something like that. Yeah. You know, a lot of people get annoyed with that. It's like, oh, you mean I gotta go back? Like, we're huge on doing in-person closes. Like, I get it, COVID and all that kind of stuff. We have the technology, obviously, but you and I both know I can sit across the table from somebody and see that there is still concern in their eyes versus, well, I don't know any better. And then they sign the document and then they ask you a bunch of these questions later. Like, I went over all this with them instead of just taking the extra time sitting across the table from Mrs. Johnson and just knowing, hey, this is a big process. Like, I'm here to do it as quickly as we can, but don't feel like you've got to rush this. Like, if you want to understand the difference and why this hip and ridge works better than this hip and ridge, then we're going to talk about that. And that's yeah. the ways that we tool and train our guys, like with industry experience and industry knowledge mm-hmm. is because the second that we belittle the process or dumb it down to less than it should be for the customer, it's going to create problems. And I love what you said about that. Like, it's, you're not creating a big enough situation that they're going to want to go talk about, oh, this is everyday business. This is cool. No big deal. Like, no big deal versus holy crap. Like, they worked for free for this amount of time. Mm-hmm. They met with them. They didn't just stop when the adjuster first had a rebuttal to why the roof didn't need to be replaced. Like, they truly did advocate for me through this whole process. And they've given me peace of mind about any question I could have asked.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's just a much greater impact, just to your point of creating, you know, long-term customers.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you've got customers out there that they own 5 to 10 rental properties. Yep. And if you approach that the wrong way as a transactional approach, it's like, oh, they just need the cheapest option possible. One of the installs we're doing today is for a landlord, and he paid for code upgrades out of pocket. He paid for upgrades out of pocket because he saw the value in the product and the value in the way that we approach the business mm-hmm. and the value and peace of mind that we leave him with. Oh, and yeah. like, that's the kind of stories we love to tell.
Yeah. And speaking on that peace of mind, that's one thing that I drive home in my sales. my presentation is, if the customer, right before they sign, I ask them, is there anything you are concerned about? Any questions that you have for me before we start this? And I tell them, the reason I ask that question is because I'm not willing to sign the document myself until I know that they are 100% okay, comfortable with the process. Because as soon as somebody signs and they're not comfortable, what's the first thing that's going to happen? I'm going to leave with their first check and all they're going to do is doubt. They're not going to be able to sleep mm-hmm. at night. They're going to be asking a bunch of questions. They're going to be worrying about whether or not I'm going to come back and do the job because now I've taken their money, mm-hmm. right?
And have now fun with a supplement conversation on the back end too.
Oh, exactly, right? Now they're asking me for more money? What is this, right? And so then this entire process is already screwed from the beginning and you mm-hmm. can't fix that. Right. You can do everything you want to do, but if you don't stop that from the very beginning and set that precedent that you are going to make sure they're 100% comfortable and trust you, then it's going to be hell for both you and that person. Because I also know too, I can tell when a customer is not comfortable with me. And if I know that I've signed with a customer who's not comfortable with me, now I can't sleep at night too. Because now I'm trying to figure out, okay, how can I prove to this customer that, you know, they can trust me and they can be comfortable with me and know that I'm going to take them through this process the right way, you know?
Right. And I think so often too, like, because this being commission-based world and everything, you're always hunting and chasing the next sell. Like, that's always going to be a part of what you're doing. But if you're like in that mindset of just like chase and hunt, then customers see that too. Like, they also see that you're not going to, you're like, okay, well, what happens if this gets difficult? Then, you know, well, that's the commonplace story. Well, I just was in the middle of dealing with this and can't get a hold of my contractor anymore. And there's a, you know, perpetual idea of what a contractor is because of those types of pursuits and everything too.
Yeah, for sure. So let's transition a little bit. Let's talk more specifically sales related. So you're VP of sales for Terminus.
Correct.
So on a day-to-day basis, what does that kind of look like for you, for your guys' company? What are you doing to, you know, benefit your sales team in that position?
Yeah. So essentially what that means is I am in part of the majority of sales decisions that happen from a day-to-day standpoint. Our guys are super autonomous, know what they're selling for, all that kind of stuff. But I'm checking jobs, checking profitability, checking areas we're working, seeing what's working, seeing what's not working. You know, talking about new territories, how we're going to approach new territories. If we're working in, you know, far off territories, like the conversation we got to have Monday, then I've got to have a logistical plan of how we work with production and work with our crews and work with dumpsters and all those types of moving pieces. Mm-hmm. And then also on the commercial side, doing some of the same things at just a smaller scale. Like my brother is the one who's the, you know, he's the head of our commercial department. So I'm probably working alongside him with a relational aspect of jobs and things of that nature. Or I might bring on and introduce the situation with him and his technical expertise. Mm-hmm. And so we'll walk alongside each other through those types of those things as well. I'm also the front line of our recruiting processes. And so once we put out ads and targeted ads or however we go to, you know, finding a role at that point in time, I'm going to be screening the candidates initially and in the final aspect of it. That middle part is done by the direct report of that division. So our sales manager, our production manager, financial manager, whatever the case is.
Right.
But just like, it's like I said, we've already talked about, but just that initial conversation, screening the lens that we screen through and making sure that they are somebody we want to have be a part of our family and stuff like that. And then from there, forecasting where we're going to be versus where we are. I work closely with my sales manager talking about production from week to week, how many contingencies we signed, what the average contract values are, the action items for our guys. We do go out canvas and door knock. And so making sure that they're hitting the things that we want to see them hit. If they're, it's not just physical doors. We also have different ways that we want our guys going out and knocking. And we use the relational aspect of some really cool opportunities we have here and everything as well. So
yeah.
Part of that knocking for them is fostering those relationships in different ways. And then from there, just making sure that when things are handed off to production, that's going cleanly. And if it's not, then what we got to figure out a hiccup in the process. Is it, you know, was something left off in the initial estimate? Was it something the paperwork left off and we didn't catch it? Was it distribution just, you know, left off the order? Figuring out where in the process, like my goal is just making sure that we are always moving in the right step of efficiency from initial sales to hand off to other parts of the company.
Yeah, that's awesome. So then you said you also have a sales manager that works for you guys. So correct. What does that position kind of entail? And what is their, you know, day-to-day look like for that position?
Correct. So our sales manager still manages his own book of business as alongside with the selling and managing. A lot of people have different schools of thought on that. I'm a lead from the front person, hence why if I'm not in the office, I'm out there running appointments, knocking doors, just like our guys do. So he's doing the same in that regard. He's the first line of defense to making sure contracts are written properly, making sure he's got all the proper information, making sure that the sales reps translated the paperwork properly from insurance. And if they're, you know, what we've agreed to as far as the upgrade cost, what the warranty is going to cost, what trades we are or are not performing, if it's a multiple trade, you know, claim, stuff like that. He's also doing like more grassroots type of recruiting, and then he is also managing P&L on jobs that the guys are selling and stuff like that. So when we get job increases, he's looking at what we've got to make sure that our part number's got to be if we're selling upgrades and stuff like that.
Right.
And then he's transitioning as well into more of the relational commercial side too. He's been, you know, he got his first, you know, $200,000 job this last year. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. So those types of relationships are being manifested through some of the initial residential stuff we've done for some of these customers and everything. So the guys are doing a good job of, again, revisiting those referral conversations and just looking at them through every lens possible, not just another residential roof, but, you know, flat roofs and, you know, especially roofs, whatever that looks like. And so he's, and then from that, we have a weekly meeting that he's running that is, we call it our war room, Wednesday war room. And we get in, look at what everything everybody has open, where it's at in the process. If it's caught up and hung up in the process, then what's the next thing we need to do to move it along? And then we couple that with a training topic. Sometimes it's door and script based. Sometimes it's, you know, we'll bring in a manufacturing partner and do product training. Yeah. Sometimes we'll do sales training. Sometimes we'll do, you know, just understanding paperwork in a greater way. Whatever the case is, we just kind of map out throughout the year. We know this is the cycle of where we're at in the year, and these are the tendencies that we need to push on at that point in the quarter. And then he's helping me organize the, you know, different contests and promotions that we do for our guys throughout the year to, you know, if we want to focus, you know, this month we need to drive home the guys being creating as much profit in the jobs as possible. So we'll run a spiff or whatever based around, you know, margin. We might run one based off volume, might run one off doors, might run one off of referrals. So just whatever we need our focus to be, it gives the guys incentive and drive and seeing that we're all moving towards a common purpose. And he's making sure that's happening from a day-to-day standpoint in the weeds on the ground.
That's awesome. So the sales manager, you know, where, what was his background before he was sales manager? Was he with the company, and how long, or did you hire outside of the company? Kind of how did you find him for that position?
Yeah. So he's actually somebody that I've known probably 14 years now. Happens to be, unfortunately, my best friend. So he's put up with me for a long time. And he, before the industry, he was doing hidden dog fences. So he was production managing and sales of a hidden dog fence company. And it was a cool company, but they were working him hard, and he had really maxed out what he could have done there. Mm-hmm. And so when I was still in my previous role, he just kind of said, hey, this guy that I coach with does this, and he thinks I'd be good at it. Like, I know you sell to folks, like what's your opinion on it and everything. And I tried to steer him away from it. I tried to scare him out of it. I'm really good friends with his wife. And I'm like, dude, you have to work your ass off, buddy. Like, you're going to, like, this will be the hardest job. I think you think that last job was, this will be the hardest job.
Yeah.
And so he did a great job, dove in. We didn't have a great storm to work those first few months that he was in the industry. So he really struggled through it. And he really knew what it meant to kind of pull himself through the mud and through the low points of the industry. And now he's reaping amazing benefits of it. But he was in the industry for about 2 years before we started Terminus, and being best friends, he knew that this was something that we wanted to do. And he just was like, you know, if it works out one day, if you ever need any advice, it was just like a friend to friend kind of thing at first. And then we're like, well, let's see what we can do. And we actually went outside the territory that we're in, because we were just, you know, didn't want to disrupt or be disrespectful of any pre-existing relationships or anything like that. So just went to a completely different market, and with no warning, no mailers, no business cards at the time. And we signed up and sold 12 contracts in 2 days. It's like, holy crap, there might be something to this. And so the next few months, he decided he wanted to be on board and be a part of something bigger. And he's like, as the opportunity comes to lead the team, like, I do want that next level, that leadership opportunity. And so, you know, the first 3 years of the company now, he's been, you know, we've been holding him accountable to what it means to be a good leader. And he's really filled that position well and leads from the front. He's a, you know, a football coach. So he coaches well. We always give him a hard time. He has a great halftime speech for the guys. And so he fits our culture. And that's, again, just, I don't know, I'll go back to that, but from day one, it's been buy-in of where we were going and how we can all move in the positive way and impact the community in a positive way. And so it's worked out great.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome. So as far as your sales team goes, you know, we kind of talked about retention a little bit earlier. The five guys that you have working for you right now, how long have they been with the company, and kind of where did you recruit them from?
Absolutely. So my longest tenured, he was my first rep I ever hired. He's still with us. He came from he was a music producer. So he owned a studio. And kind of over the beginning of, I guess, COVID, it feels like it's been 2.5 years now, I guess, good grief. Obviously needed to shut down the studio. People weren't coming in to record. People weren't coming in for lessons. And so he had a background of commercial flooring installation. And so he dove in and was like, cool, you're a friend of mine. Like, I need a place to work. Let's see what happens. And so he dove in. He was our first rep that we onboarded, actually. And from there, we've got a guy who came from bartending who kind of dipped his toe in both sides of the pool for the longest time. And then in the last 4 months of the year, outsold everything he had done to that whole, the whole point of the year to that point. Because he finally was like, I'm saying yes, I'm diving in. This is a, and he's the one that came up with the Trust Terminus slogan stuff. So this year he was our most improved and just completely was laser focused, and he's starting the year the same way. Then we've got a guy who came from, he was a plant manager. So he was in a different world as a concrete plant and kind of got shoved around to a different shift and lost some leadership potential down the road, found out the company was going to be selling later on and just didn't have any security. He was a Kirby vacuum door-to-door guy back when he was like 18. And so he knew the door-to-door space and really good at it. We always joke around. He could go out and knock for 5 minutes and generate, you know, two or three, you know, contingencies pretty quickly. He's fantastic at talking to people. And then we got a guy that actually came to us from the military originally. But this was a really cool, humbling recruit that came to us because GAF has a class that people can take that are interested in the industry. And if they graduate and they excel, they'll actually help with job placement for them. And so the job placement person for this program reached out to the local GAF rep in our market and said, hey, do you have a company that, you know, a few companies that he could interview with? And we were the one that they wanted him to interview with, and he's been with us ever since too. And he's been at it a couple of months now, and he's getting his feet under him as he's transitioning out of the military. And so, to answer your question, we got a guy that came from logistics. Like we didn't care what the background was. It was the lens that we were looking through, and they've checked the boxes for different reasons. And man, our team will go to training events and they'll go to conferences. And just to hear the feedback that other contractors that I talk to give me, they're like, man, your guys are like all in. Like, I don't know if you pay them differently. I don't know. Like, they start trying to figure this thing out. It's like, there's not a secret sauce, man. Like, you set up your structure, you set up who you need to have and who makes the difference. And then it's, you know, from there, it's just holding each other accountable. Like, now that I've got those types of guys, like, I have to provide them the best training in the industry because I don't want to lose them. I want them to feel like they are constantly being poured into. And then if they decide to go do something else down the road, at least I know the people that we're competing with are adequately tooled and equipped to help customers in the right way. And if anything, it's going to move the industry in the right way.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, talking on, you know, sales guys and their, how well they're doing in the business. What is your guys's main way? I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, but how do you guys really, sorry, man, my voice is going out.
You're good.
I'm talking way too much. Woo. What is like your guys's main focus on how to bring in more leads? Is it door knocking, Google, Facebook ads? Like what do you guys focus on the most?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. We're super humbled and proud. Like, we've never went out and bought an advertisement or anything like that. Like, all our not bought referrals or anything like that, not bought reviews and things of that nature. Like, they're genuine responses of people that we've dealt with and in our community and stuff like that. And so for us to literally be able to door knock and say, while we're doing our inspection, please go read about our company. Please go read about our certifications. Please go read about what makes us us.
Right.
And by the time you get done with that inspection and you're showing them, you know, your damage report, or, you know, this is your clean bill of health because there is no damage. Like, all those things move in the right direction. We've gotten more referrals off of clean inspections than anything else.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that, like, in our market, just to be really transparent, and you can ask trainers from other markets, like, that is an issue, is being able to trust contractors in this market. I know that's everywhere, never discrediting, downplaying that. But Just doing things the proper way is always elevating your customer's experience and elevating the types of people that they turn you on to and everything as well. So the reviews, as the reviews have increased, the inbound calls have increased. You know, storm seasons here in Georgia, people know when it happens to start looking for folks, start looking for leaks and everything. So, you know, there's some targeted stuff we're doing through social and stuff as well.
Right.
But we will never knock, we will always knock doors, because you know where the storm's at, they know where the storm's at, but just handling that the right way, being the right advocate for them, being the right mouthpiece for them in that process, knowing that if they have to go toe-to-toe with their insurance company, that you're tooled to be able to do that. So our guys, before they do that, even that first step of signing the contingency after the door has been knocked and we've done the initial inspection, like we've pre-framed what's going to happen for that customer and the general process things go through so that there's already peace of mind there. We talk about building rapport a lot, you know, at the end of our guys go out knocking, they're not always just trying to do inspections around the spot. Like we use that first appointment set. And then when we show back up, we've already put trust in the mind of the customer. Mm-hmm. Hey, Terminus is actually one of those contractors that said they were going to do. They actually showed up when they said they were going to. And so we're stacking the cards in our favor in those situations. And then our guys are learning what it means to truly manage an area really well. And so it's a collection of things.
Yeah.
But the guys know the avenues that they're successful in. Like guys that don't mind door knocking or the guys that aren't that great at it know other ways to generate leads through their channels and stuff like that. And so, you know, there's an expectation because I think it's really easy when it goes back to action items for us to talk about these are the, you know your conversion rates, your closing rates. So if you're trying to get this many contingencies a week, it's a math equation.
Right.
You know? And so we teach the guys to really be aware of their percentages, and not everybody's percentages are, you know, the same across the board. Some guys, it may take them 60 doors, but there might also be knocking $40,000 contracts, or they might be, you know, selling another $5,000 worth up, whatever the case is. The guys are starting to truly understand what it means to control their lead funnels a lot better.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, one last question I have for you that I'm really trying to focus on to bring, you know, more people into the industry. I kind of came up with this idea of the Roofing Sales Podcast because I wanted more people to see what this industry can do for you and bring the right people. One question I have for you is for somebody who's in a completely different market, obviously, because if they were in our market, we'd want them to come work for us if they were good, right?
Right.
Completely different market. And they are, you know, right on the line. They want to make the jump, but they're trying to figure out what company to work for. What would you recommend to them to do as far as research or you know, interviews to find the right company to work for that's going to be a good, solid company? It's not going to be one of these shady contractors that we've talked about.
Right. There's too much information out there to not do any type of, you know, any type of reading up on the company that you're considering.
Yeah.
Like if you're interviewing with a company, before you've accepted even an initial onboarding interview, I'm going to go look at, and this, you know, for, you know, we're talking about being different at the top. This is probably part of why we were able to be successful and find where we fit best is I was going to go make sure that I was the right fit for them. I think it's easy. If you got an open head count on a contractor role, like I think it should be in everybody's mind is, oh, well, they probably would be willing to hire anybody and everybody.
Yeah.
Like, and then from there, go find out about the company. And it's like, oh man, like they put their values on their website. Like maybe in my conversation, why don't I talk about why that's important to me?
Yeah.
I think it's important to know what you're looking for as a interviewer, as much as it is to know what the company's looking for.
Yeah.
And don't be closed off to just because it's not that one thing might not be the way that you're used to.
Right.
Be open to it and know, like, is there an actionable thing to be able to get to where you want to be? if you're just keep getting fed this pipe dream of, oh, you could make this much money, you could be doing this, or, you know, our average sales guy, he knocks for an hour a week and he drives an F-250 and makes 50 grand a month. dive into the company, like go look and search for, like, if you look up Termos Construction Group, it might show the people that works for it. Go just look at their Instagrams, look at their real people, like see what people inside the organization are doing. Are they talking about the company? If they're not making a single mention of it, they're probably not proud of where they work.
Right.
If you go look at their story, or you go look at the story of the company and they're resharing stuff from the reps and everything, there's pride in both directions of that.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like, I want to have a place where, yeah, making money is important. But what if, like, I actually went to work every day where I felt like I was valued? What if I went to work where we talked about, like, what creating a legacy means for my family? What if we talk about, like, what generational wealth looks like, not just for these owners that, you know, tout the boats and the ranches and stuff like that, like you talked about, but, like, why don't we talk about, dude, my guys are, like, monthly meeting with financial advisors to make sure, like, if they have money to invest, how to invest in it.
Right.
And I think that I'd rather people find companies that find worth in people and do that. And so, look at if they're talking about who they contribute to in a nonprofit fashion. There's so many things. Like, at the end of the day, it's more than just roofing. And if it looks like it's just roofing, it's probably not the fit for somebody that is looking to grow and have a, you know, a bigger impact.
100%. I definitely agree with you there. Well, man, that was that was an awesome answer. I love that. You know, I'm going to go ahead and link your Instagram down below. Company Perfect. Website as well, so people can check you guys out. I know you guys are doing awesome things over there, and like I said before we started recording, you guys got some awesome wraps on your vehicles too. And that's something.
Yes,
I it's a guilty pleasure. I like looking at people's truck wraps. I just find that very
interesting. Ours is like we're more in everything with our approach. We don't want to just be loud and obnoxious. We want to be sophisticated, clean, and so we do like flat matte wraps on the vehicles with just nice clean lettering. And then it's got our manufacturers we partner with, and they, you know, they've been great. Shout out to all the guys that helped Terminus be who we are. We wouldn't be an organization without, you know, those great partners and stuff. So JF, Atlas, thank you guys for everything y'all do.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It was awesome to be able to talk to you a little bit about Terminus and your experience. So
absolutely.
Thank you very much. And we'll catch you later.
Thanks, man. Shout out to you guys as well, Jacob. I'm watching what you guys do over at Rhino and everything. Keep crushing it over there. Keep being a contractor that's set apart from everybody else. And y'all are doing great things. So thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you so much.